I'll be reading from Acts 17. Now while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him when he saw that the city was given over to idols. Therefore he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and with the Gentile worshippers, and in the marketplace daily with those who happened to be there. Then certain Epicurean and Stoic philosophers encountered him. And some said, "What does this babbler want to say?" Others said, "He seems to be a proclaimer of foreign gods, because he preached to them Jesus and the resurrection."
Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome. Visitors, welcome. Beautiful fall morning, isn't it? Man, I love it. I love it. This is getting to be my kind. And I like fall. It's just a good time of the year for me. And so we're glad that y'all are here. Sad note today, Ben Bennett's brother Bo passed away this week, and that funeral will be today, and the burial will be at Milton Cemetery, and the funeral is at 2 o'clock at Woodfin's, and the family and friends will come up and we'll have a meal prepared for them after the burial. So we won't have a leadership meeting this afternoon, but we will have that, and then we'll have our evening service at 6, and Ralph McKee will be speaking tonight. So you can come help serve with the family, and there's always enough for us all to eat this evening, and then Ralph will speak to us, and we'll have our service at 6. So I just want to encourage you to come be a part of that. And Penny's sister-in-law, Janet, died this week and was buried on Thursday. And certainly our sympathy goes to that family. It seems like we've just, it kind of comes in groups. We've had several of those, but we'll have that this afternoon. And this morning, after our morning service, we'll, about 5 or 10 minutes after our morning service, for those who'd like to, we're going to meet for time of prayer in the library. So if you have a prayer request, we'd love for you to just come and be there. Or if you just want to pray with us. You may not have a specific request, but you want to just come pray with us, we'll meet there. And I hope we outgrow that room, we'll move somewhere else. Not a problem, but just we did this last month, and so we want to do that again. We're just going to sit down and pray about specific things that might be on our hearts and in our lives and that we need to be prayerful for. So join us in the library. If you'd like to, just a few minutes after service, we'll have time to visit and make sure that you make our visitors welcome, and then we'll meet there. And if you're visiting with us, you're not excluded. In fact, when we did this last month, we had some visitors came and joined us. They had a prayer request, and so we just prayed our shepherds will be there, and we just encourage you to come and be a part of that. This morning, we're continuing in Acts 17. We're going to just spend a little time 17 because I just like Acts 17. There's a lot in Acts 17, and I want to talk about. But before I kind of get into this lesson, for all of our young people, and for all of us, but especially our young people, we've been studying. If you've not been with us, we started a couple months ago studying through the Bible and on a 3-year. Pattern. We're on a 3-year journey through the Bible in our classes. So from our youngest classes through our adult classes, we're all studying the same curriculum that will carry us through the Bible in 3 years. And so now, in this passage that Sam read for us, they called Paul a babbler. What's this babbler talking about? Now, in light of what we've been studying, boys, y'all listening? All right, good, because you might get this. In light of what we've been studying, why would they call Paul a babbler? Can you think what we've studied in the last couple of weeks that they would call Paul a babbler? What would that mean? Why would they call Paul a babbler? That's right. That comes from the study. Remember we talked about the tower that they built? And God confused their language where they could not understand each other? And it was the Tower of Babel. That's right. So when you call someone a babbler, for us it's come that they just talk and talk and talk, but it has this origin in something that we don't understand. Somebody that's just talking almost nonsensical, that this doesn't make sense. So that's where that word, even of ancient times, that's where that comes from. That's how much influence the Bible has had, especially in Western culture, that so much of our language, when we talk about sodomy laws, which is in part of our vernacular, at least used to be, it came from the sins of Sodom. So those words, so that's why when they call Paul a babbler, it's making reference back to the Tower of Babel, okay? So I just thought that was interesting and timely. So I want to think about that. So all of these things we're learning, they all continue to tie together. So, well, don't necessarily want to talk about Paul the babbler, although we might a little bit in a minute. But I want to talk about the first part of this passage that expresses Paul's concern about Athens when he sees all of their temples and all of their monuments and all of their memorials to all of these gods. The city of Athens is full of temples. Now we think about the temple, the Parthenon, right? That's what we think about. I thought it was interesting that how many of you watched, and I've only watched the first because then I lost and I wanted to watch them in order, and so I've got to sit down and get B to record this or stream it for me, the country music history. I wonder if you watched that was on PBS. If you looked at the first one, remember WSM, We Shield Millions, was not about a radio station. It was about advertising the National Life and Accident Insurance Company. If you don't know, WSM is the broadcasting arm of the National Life and Accident Insurance Company. 60,000 clear watts of broadcasting power, the air castle of the South from Nashville, Tennessee. That was the whole purpose, was to sell. Radio was about selling insurance. And that the family that started, who lived in Belmead, that very many of the people did not like the barnyard country they were playing because they felt like it gave Nashville a bad image. And so they actually started playing opera on WSM to change the image. And that's when George D. Hay, because the opera came on right before the live broadcast of the barn dance, said, instead of opera, we're having Grand Ole Opry. And that's where that name came from, kind of by accident. All right? But the reason they liked that is because they didn't want Nashville to be known for barnyard country, which has been pretty good to us, hadn't it? I mean, they're shoulder to shoulder on Lower Broad every evening. I mean, I'm talking about 7 and 8 wide walking down Lower Broad to go to Tootsie's. But what did they want the image to be? You remember? The Athens of the South. The Athens of the South. Paul is in Athens, moving to Athens in Acts 17. The Athens of the South. Why was Nashville called the Athens of the South? There's really two reasons. Why would Nashville be called the Athens of the South? Two. One, we have the only to scale replica of the Parthenon in the world. All right? The Parthenon is the temple to Athena that sits on the Areopagus, or the Acropolis, at Athens, up on the hill of Athens. And the only two-scale version of that in the world is in Nashville, Tennessee. And the second reason is Nashville had and still has multiple colleges and universities. I mean, we got colleges everywhere in Nashville. I mean, some I hadn't even hardly heard of. The college of this, the college of that. You got Belmont, Lipscomb, Trevecca, Vanderbilt, TSU. I mean, just without thinking about it, naming them off the top of my head, right? And you got art colleges and all kinds of things. And the reason that was there, we know why the Parthenon would be Athens, because Athens is a place of learning, all right? the Athenians, and actually as this passage closes, Luke tells us, or not as this, as the part we're going to read today, Luke tells us that in Athens they took pride in discussing and listening to and vetting all kind of new ideas. That's what they like to do. So what happens in Athens, if you have any affluence at all, you hire somebody to do the work and you spend your time around discussing new ideas. It's not a bad deal if you can get it, right? I mean, that's what they did. And again, it's very foreign to our culture a little bit, because our culture, in lots of ways, and it plays out, we resent the people who get paid for not working, who get paid off the work of somebody else, right? Hey, we do. We've vilified them.
Only because I'm jealous.
Jerry, you're an honest man. But in our culture, the John Wayne, the hard working, the roll up your sleeves image is the image of our culture, right? Especially in the South. And I'm not opposed to that at all. But in Athens, the thought was, you know, you would hire and or had slaves that did the work, and you had time to sit around and talk and discuss. I mean, I don't know how they did it. They didn't have a Hardee's, but they still found a place to discuss. You know, no Brown store, no Hardee's. They still found a place. Where did they go? I'm giving you a lot of history, but this is important. This is not even today's lesson, but this is all free. But you need to know this. I was going back next week. They had malls. You think we're the first ones to have malls, shopping malls? They had malls, covered shopping areas. They're called stoas. They're called stoas, not stores. I'm not saying it wrong. You know, I know. Why don't you go down to the stoa and buy, get me something? Buy me a pack of cigarettes. No, we used to say that. We would never say that now, right? Stoas. And if you look down from Mars Hill, from this outcropping on the way up the Acropolis, you can look down and you're going to see the Temple to Zeus. And you're going to see these stoas, these long covered shops. But not only were they places of shopping, they were places of discussion, where people would go out into the public and they would discuss. And also an Athenian, at certain levels, you were compelled to serve in the government and kind of a council role. That was part of it. But their elections were more of a lottery system. It's kind of an odd system. But, you know, in a lottery type thing, you would serve. So being involved in the civil government was something they were involved in, okay? Which is a little different than the Romans. But the Greeks did that. The Athenians did that. They were part of that. It was their culture. So discussing politics and art and philosophy was part of being an Athenian. All right? Now, let's just go ahead while we're looking at words and things and places that make sense. If I said this person is stoic, it's still a word we use today, right? That somebody is stoic. What do I mean? Usually we use that to describe somebody's personality or demeanor. If I say you are stoic, what does that mean? Anybody know?
Serious.
Don't show your feelings. That's right. Somebody who might be kind of stone-faced, kind of cold, aloof. Are those all kind of good synonyms for being stoic? Now, where did that come from? Well, we got two groups of philosophers that's talked about in the book of Acts in Athens. The Epicureans and the Stoics. And the Epicureans were about pleasure. We would more like the Epicureans in our culture, right? Because we like pleasure and entertainment. We just do. If you don't believe it, what do we all do? We got video games. What do you got on your phone? Not only, I don't even want to call it a phone anymore. We call it a phone, but it's so much more. It's a computer that lets you talk on it, right? But don't most of us have games? Don't you have some games on there? Most of us, not all of us, but most of us. I only have one game. There's only one. Somebody else downloaded it, but I do the word puzzle every day. I do that puzzle every day because it helps my mind, right? I do that puzzle every day.
I need to move on up to the next level.
Yeah, well, it takes me a while. It takes a while, but I'm past Angry Birds. I never played Angry Birds. But we play games. Many of us yesterday did what? Maybe you watched a ball game, or if you couldn't watch it, you listened to it on the radio. UT got a win. Watch out, Alabama. Here we come, baby. I know you're scared in Tuscaloosa this week. But we enjoy the entertainment. Movies, right? We've got whole television shows that talk about entertainment. Not only do we have the entertainment, but we have shows that talk about entertainment, that talk about sports, right? 24/7, we can talk about sports. Or we can turn on and we can talk about the movies. We got magazines called People that just talk about people in entertainment, right? It's a huge part. So we'd be more like the Epicureans, who were about pleasure, who were about entertainment and pleasure. And the other conflicting group are the Stoics, who are very much, it is about logic and reason, not about emotion and entertainment and enjoyment. And I'm going to tell you something. Some of us have split personalities. Not so much in our congregation, but in times past, we've had split personalities. We're Epicureans outside of the church building, but we're Stoics at church, right? That used to really be. I remember a congregation I used to preach at with some regularity in years past that were the friendliest, nicest people. The friendliest, nicest people. And I enjoyed preaching. But between class and church, they all went in, sat down in the pew, and man, it was like you couldn't even speak to them. They just weren't going to say a thing. And then, but man, when the final amen was said, they were back with personalities again. It was the oddest thing, you know. But we share all the time. But sometimes we're that way. But that's who the Stoics were. So that's where that term came from. So we see Babel, we see Stoic. These are biblical things that have survived into our culture. But that's the background in which Paul is going to speak. But here's what I want to talk about this morning. I'm going to finish maybe. Oh, that was background, but I think it's interesting. I hope it excites you to keep studying, because all this makes, you know, hopefully makes sense. Paul is moved, concerned, has anxiety about all of these temples and all of these gods and all of these memorials that are in Athens. And his anxiety is not, you know, why did you do all this? You shouldn't have done that. It's not, y'all wasted a lot of money on all these temples. You know, it's a waste of good real estate building this memorial. None of that concerned Paul. But what's Paul concerned about? Paul is concerned because these people are worshiping all of these gods and none of them are real. None of them are true, and none of them can bring salvation and forgiveness of their sins. None of them. Not Zeus, not Athena, not the unknown God. They've even got one to the unknown God. Not Jupiter. And I'm trying to get, because some of these are Roman names, some of them are Greek names for the same folks. Well, I guess Mercury would be one of their gods. But they got all of these gods that they're worshiping, because they don't want to make anybody mad. They don't want to leave anybody out. And none of them are the true God. None of them can do the Athenians any good, period. But certainly can't do them any good in things that matter. Because they're not Jehovah and His Son Jesus, who are the only true and living gods along with the Spirit, right? And so Paul is moved by that. He's not angered by it. He is in anxiety about it, because he's concerned about these people, because he knows no matter how educated they are, no matter how intelligent they are, no matter how much they study, if they don't know God, they are wrong and lost. Wrong and lost. If man could figure it out on his own, what would have been the best thing for God to do on the plains where the people gathered to build a tower? What should God have done? Let him build the tower, right? If man could figure it out on his own, let him build the tower. Let him build a society and create a better world. Now this hits us all pretty close to home, does it not? It hits us all pretty close to home. Now, you go into our culture, are you going to see lots of temples and lots of monuments to supernatural eternal beings or supposedly eternal beings? No, not in our culture today, are you? You're not. You're not. But it's great reading the literature. I like that in school. I like reading the mythologies and all that. I liked it. Not that I worshipped it, but I just thought it was, the stories were interesting as they sought to explain things. But what are you going to find? A deep desire within many of us, most of us as a culture, to create a better world. Why are we frustrated? Do most of us admit that our culture is frustrated? We're frustrated to the point of anger. Right? We are frustrated to the point of anger. Who has been more prosperous than us? I mean, even those of us who would not count ourselves rich, I mean, who that has preceded us has ever had the comforts that we have? What do you mean you don't build a fire? What do you mean you just push a button in your house? What do you mean you come home and your house is 70 whatever degrees you want it to be? What do you mean you got water in the house and it's hot and it's cold? Ice? You got ice? In the summer you got ice? Ice. Very good. You mean you go to the potty inside and it's not a mess? I don't want to be crude. We take all of that for granted, don't we? I mean, things kings did not have in the past that all of us have. We have been blessed with communication. We can talk to our friends and neighbors and family members around the world. You know, I did not serve in the military, nor, I mean, when I was a kid, I had family members that served away from here, mostly stationed in the U.S., but would have deployments into Southeast Asia and those type things. And, you know, they would be gone for a while and you wouldn't hear. And there's still some of that. But even people who are deployed now through Skype, you know, you don't have to wait for that letter to take however many weeks through Skype. At least at times we can see each other. And I'm not, these are all wonderful things. So we're able to communicate better. We're better to able to have greater community. We have greater prosperity. Yet we are frustrated to the point of anger. To the point of anger. We are so disillusioned. And this is not new. It's not new. Richard Nixon is one of the first presidents that I really remember. Some of you remember Johnson before and Kennedy before and Eisenhower prior to that and others. But for me, Richard Nixon was the first one I can remember. One, I had a dog named Nixon. Got a dog. His name was, it was a collie. We waited until after the election and decided we would either name him Humphrey or Nixon, depending on who won the election. So his name was Nixon, and that was one mean son of a gun. In fact, that dog was so mean that we had to take him to my aunt's who lived on a dairy farm in Eagleville because he bit the trash man. He wouldn't bite us, but I don't know if we had named him Hubert. I think maybe his personality would have been different. But he was, so I remember Richard Nixon. And then my grandfather was sick had a really bad heart, and so he kept me. He was able to keep me. And on the black and white television, we watched the impeachment trials of Richard Nixon. And so I can remember doing that and eating plain white rice and sweet potatoes. That's what he would fix. He would get a bushel of sweet potatoes. They set in the garage. He would put it in the toaster oven, and he made plain white rice in the stewer, and that's what you ate for lunch every day when you stayed with Granddaddy. And when you were 6 or 7 years old, watching the trials on the black and white TV, eating white rice and baked sweet potatoes got old, let me just be honest with you. Because I remember Richard Nixon, right? Where I'm going, I remember that. But Richard Nixon made a speech at the Nixon Library in Loma Linda, California. This would have been years ago now. And he said, "We are the most prosperous nation on the face of the earth." But even then, this would have been 40 years ago now. He said, "But the polls show us that we are the most dissatisfied we have ever been." He says, "We are a people rich in goods and poor in spirit." And he was right then, and it's true today. Because our frustration is, what are we trying to do? We're trying to do what the people at Babel were trying to do. What the Athenians were trying to do is trying to build, through whatever method, a utopian place that you and I are not going to build in the absence of God. We can't do it. Now, does that mean we shouldn't strive to do make good decisions and do right things? We should. I'm not knocking that. But this thought that we're going to solve all of the problems, we're in a fallen world, and we're not going to cure all the diseases, that doesn't mean we shouldn't try. Because guess what? I'm sure glad none of us, maybe some of you who are older, most of us, we don't suffer from polio anymore, right? Used to be devastating. I remember as a kid seeing those pictures of the iron lung in our social studies books or whatever, health books. Remember that? People laying in the iron lung because of their polio. I had an uncle who lost the use, most of the use of his legs from polio. That we've cured diseases, and all that's a great thing. But what happens when we cure one? Another one's coming, right? AIDS became an issue. I mean, we cure one. There's cancer is a large issue. The reason that those problems are going to be there. So we're not going to be able to solve all those problems without God. So it's a dependence on, we need to learn to depend on God, right? And find our comfort and satisfaction. Because Paul said, "I have a peace that outweighs understanding. Because I trust God. I trust God." So Paul wasn't frustrated in the midst of a lot of bad things happening to him. Because why? He trusted God. The Athenians are trusting all these gods, and Paul looks at them and says, not only is he anxious for them because these gods are not going to solve your physical problems, but much more importantly than that, and importantly for us, is they're not going to solve the spiritual need you have for forgiveness and reconciliation to the true and living God. Now here's my question for us today. As we look around us in frustration at culture and where it's going, and some of us are very disturbed about where our culture is going from an ethical, moral standpoint, right? Concerns you, scare you. You worry about your kids and grandkids. You know, I used to worry about generations coming. Now I'm worried about what happens before I get out of here, right? Used to be we just worried about our kids and grandkids, but I mean, I think if things change the next 20 years like they've changed the last 20 years, and I live 20 more years, What will it be? Right? What will things be? But here's where our concern should be. How many people every day are dying unprepared to face the judgment? It stressed Paul. It should stress us. It should stress us. Not just that our culture is in a real upheaval. Not that we're just dissatisfied with the troubles that we face and our inability through education and through medication and all of those things to solve all the problems that we were hoping that we could solve. But the more important thing is there are people who do not know a God or who worship a false God or a false philosophy, who do not know Jehovah and Jesus, who are dying every day unprepared to face their God, to quote the song. As God's people, how moved are we by that? We should be so less concerned about changing the culture and much more concerned about changing people's lives and destiny by teaching the truth about the living God. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father except through me." I don't care how benevolent you are. I don't care how kind you are. I don't care how philanthropic you are. I don't care what a good parent you are. I don't care how disciplined you are. If you have not submitted and found faith in Jesus Christ, your sins are still yours to be held accountable for. And that's hard on us, isn't it? Because we know some people that are basically good people that we like. That we like. That don't know Jesus. And as our God, as God's people, we should be concerned and anxious about teaching them about Jesus. That's where Paul is when he gets to Athens. He looks at this great city full of knowledge and understanding and saying, "But you're all wrong. You've got some great things. You're going to make a difference in the world. The Greeks made a difference in our world that we still enjoy today," right? Let's be honest. They did. The Greeks even laid the groundwork for the coming of Jesus through language and government that spills over into the Roman Empire, that brings about a peace that makes it appropriate for Jesus to come. But all the good things they did, the worshiping of gods that are not real, or gods that are distortions of the true and living God. Because that's where Satan really likes to be, right? He likes to distort things. What did he do in the garden that we just studied about? He distorted what God said, didn't he? He didn't completely deny everything. He didn't say, "Well, God didn't tell you that." He just distorted what God said and why He said it. As God's people, we need to be sick in our stomachs about all of those we know who are lost. And what does that mean? That means they are eternally destined for punishment and hell. Let's don't sugarcoat it. That's what it means. That's what it means. This is an old analogy, but it doesn't get much better than this. If you're standing, maybe you're at Center Hill, which is a beautiful lake, isn't it? It's beautiful all times of the year. This time of year, it's beautiful. But what if you're standing there and you're coming off the hills right there before you get across the bridge? You know, it's pretty winding, and you can get rolling pretty good. I remember I was driving. I had a 76 Lincoln Town Car. That dude could be in two time zones, is how long it was. And I'm coming off that hill with a friend of mine, Wendell Hicks. And I'm 17, 18. We'd gone to Fairfield Glade or something, spend the weekend, some kids and a couple of parents. And he reached up and patted me on the shoulder one time. He said, "Mario, hold it on the road." You know, I was coming off there pretty fast. And in the back of that car, you could, it was interesting. But what if somebody's coming down there and the bridge is out? Which of us, knowing the bridge is out and a car passes, is going to say, "Well, they seem to know where they're going and they're comfortable where they're going. I'm not going to tell them about the bridge being out." Or he would say, "Whoo, that's a beautiful car. Man, that's a beautiful car they got. It's fast. Isn't that beautiful? I'm not going to say anything, but I sure like their car." I don't know them. So I'm not going to say anything. It's none of my business to tell them what's ahead. None of my business. I'm not going to tell them. They'll find out the bridge is out when they crash off in the river, in the lake. Not a one of us would do that, would we? We would be putting up signs. We'd be doing flares. We'd be standing in the road waving our arms. We would do everything in the world to stop those people from going off of the bridge. If you got sensitive feet, you better curl your toes. But we stand on the road every day and watch people speed past us, and we don't say a single word. We don't even seem concerned that they are hell-bound. We don't say a thing. We're embarrassed. We don't want to pry in their business. We don't want to question their faith. They're sincere, good people. They're good people. Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and life. No man comes to the Father except by me. Paul comes to the great city of Athens, a city that shines with knowledge, on the cutting edge of intelligence and understanding, and have gods everywhere, man. Again, we're going to talk about, they got one to an unknown God. They don't want to leave anybody out. And Paul doesn't look and say, oh, these are religious people. They'll eventually find their way, or they're so intelligent, they're so smart, they're going to come up with a solution. Paul is anxious and upset because he sees all of those memorials and temples and says, these people are lost. As God's people, that's what our concern ought to be. That's the light we should be shining out of this building and out of our lives every day. Every day. Is the bridge is out. The bridge is out. Let me show you the detour that leads you safely across. Because that's the teaching of Jesus. And that's what Paul is going to do in Athens. That's what Paul is going to do in Athens. They're going to call him a babbler. They're going to say, what is this crazy man talking about? But he's going to tell them the truth about God and His Son Jesus, because he knows in it. He says, not in this passage, but here's Paul's view. He said, I am not ashamed. I'm not embarrassed to proclaim about Jesus, about the gospel, the good news of Jesus, because it, the good news of the gospel, what Jesus did for us, he said, it is the power of God for salvation to the Jew and the Gentile, right? I'm not going to be embarrassed because that and it alone, Paul doesn't say that, but that's the implication, it and it alone is the power for salvation. We've got the information. I just urge us not to be so concerned about the cultural issues, but be concerned about the people. Right? You know what Jesus said? Jesus didn't say, I came to make the world a better place. Do you find that in His teachings? I came to make the government better. Jesus didn't say it. Not for now. He says it in the future, that the government would be built on Him, right? That would be perfect. I didn't come to make the government better. I didn't come to make the culture better. He said, I came to do what? What did He say?
Seek and save the lost.
I came to seek and save the lost. I came to seek and save the lost. Jesus came to seek and save the lost. Paul goes into Athens to seek and save the lost. If we're going to walk in the steps of Jesus and the apostles, we need to be about seeking and saving the lost. Seeking and saving the lost. Because none of the rest of this matters. If our names and the names of those around us are not written in the Lamb's Book of Life, the rest of it doesn't matter. I don't care how good we are, even as Christians. I mean, should we be about benevolence? We should be. Because that was one of the things that the apostles were very into, saying, we want you to care for the poor. We ought to be about that. James, the brother of Jesus, said, we ought to be about what? Caring for widows and orphans in their affliction. We ought to be about that. But we also have to be about what? Teaching the lost about Jesus and encouraging each other to walk in His steps. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? You need to come do that while we stand and sing.